You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Thanks for being here. If you have a smartphone, a tablet, a computer, that's all you really need to use telemedicine. It's sometimes called telehealth or virtual visits. And generally, it just refers to a video visit with a remotely located care provider like a physician or a therapist over a secure connection. And we, the patient, we use a website link or an app to connect. And right now the goal is to prevent the spread of the coronavirus, especially to those who are most vulnerable. Telemedicine is a tool in a toolbox. Have you ever had a video call with your doctor? What questions do you have about how telehealth works? Have you ever had an over-the-phone triage before? How did that go? We're at 800-642-1234. Dr. Thomas Brazelton is a pediatrics professor at UW School of Medicine and Public Health. He is medical director for UW Health Telehealth Program. Dr. Brazelton, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you, Kate. Thanks for having me.
Well, let's start with the present. How are physicians and nurses using telemedicine right now in the battle against the coronavirus?
Yeah, that's a great question because most of them actually aren't. We have been working like most health centers and health systems to get into this brave new world of technology. Healthcare is lamentably quite slow in doing things that don't immediately affect patients, so it's easy for us to go out and buy new scanners and new operative robots and things like that. I won't say that's easy, but we tend to jump at glittery objects. The telehealth space has been a much more difficult one to get into from an academic health center perspective, where we're not looking immediately at a profit necessarily, but how to access people in their places and looking for at least some remediation for that. And it's been very slow coming from the feds and the state to get paid for doing it. So telehealth programs like ours have started up because they were a good idea, because we saw outcomes improve when we did it, but it didn't necessarily spread to everyone. So there's a long-winded answer that not everyone's doing it, but the COVID-19 pandemic, for the reasons you pointed out, have thrown us into it. And in the last 2 weeks, I would say UW Health, for one, has moved further in 10 years in the telehealth space than it obviously ever has.
Right. You've been working on this for about a decade now, and I'm wondering, is this the turning point for telemedicine? Will we think about it and use it differently when we're on the other side of this pandemic?
Absolutely, because everyone is thinking about it, not from the patient on up. It comes at a good time, I would say, because we are really always we're looking for opportunities to meet the patient where they are. We fully recognize that having clinics located in the center of town it's not a good place for people, especially at the end of a day. We realize that the hours that we're open, closing a clinic at 5 o'clock for a working family is a non-starter, right? So we have got to do a better job meeting patients where they are, and we're heading that way. Telehealth is essentially a patient drive platform. It's patient directed. It's patient generated. If we give them the opportunities, the open portals, if you will, the providers who are available, especially at the times that they need us, it's literally a touch a button and open a visit. So we're getting there, but again, to keep patients out of our facilities, to ensure that we are able to triage them and say, hey, do you need to be seen, or can we just check in with you on a daily basis, or God forbid, do you need to be admitted to the hospital because symptoms have gotten so much worse? It truly is what we need, because I can't assess that over the phone. I need to see you because a picture is a thousand words.
We're talking with Dr. Thomas Brazelton, a professor of pediatrics at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. He's medical director of UW Health's telehealth program. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think your local hospital or clinic should be using telemedicine or telehealth technology as in the face of the coronavirus? Are you reluctant to use video conferencing with your medical professionals? What is holding you back? Join in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. Brazelton, let's break down a little bit here, regulation and insurance. Last week, President Trump announced that it would be expanding access to Medicare telehealth services. How does this change the use of telemedicine?
It does. I think it gets people's attention. Medicare has been relaxing its restrictions or guidelines and requirements for patient reimbursement for Medicare. I think that's not necessarily the populations that we always need to reach, though. We have recently passed an act with Governor Evers in Wisconsin allowing Medicaid to apply more relaxed standards and get parity, which basically means we're seeing a telehealth visit the same as we would as a in-person face-to-face visit, and opening it up to appropriate payment scales as well. So the Fed's moving things along as they have been with the Connect bill and a lot of other ones that get broad bipartisan support have really been forced to be pushed. So I do think that's a good thing for everybody. The rubber will meet the road when we are through this pandemic, because a lot has been done to give lip service to, giving us more access to patients and not making finances a barrier. But the fact is, not all of us have the equipment that we need. Certainly patients don't all have the equipment that we need, even in the connected age we're in.
Yeah, I imagine you can't just flip a switch and your information technology, your IT needs will be solved. What do healthcare providers need from IT to be able to successfully be in the telemedicine realm?
Yeah, they need support and education. So the beginning, it's pretty easy to download an app and have it on your phone. I was going to say that the feds have also loosened restrictions on use of certain unapproved and non-HIPAA protected or encrypted software that's out there. We feel that that's a bit of a Pandora's box, because while CMS may waive the fines for HIPAA violations, there are a lot of other regulators out there, and there's civil court. So if you are part of a breach that, again, after the COVID-19 dust has settled, people come back and say, gosh, that was not a very good idea for you to do things in this particular way, and you failed to put appropriate security measures in place, and it led to a lot of damage out there. I don't think that's a good idea. So, again, in its infinite wisdom, the feds have lightened restrictions, but it may open Pandora's box for folks. So it does require, and we have gone through a long vetting process over the years and established a pretty good foundation of what we need to have our providers equipped with. But just getting them the software is not enough. They have to have the right equipment depending on where they're working from. So that means a multimedia monitor. It has to have a camera, built-in mic, and speakers. They can do it from tablets or from smartphones. But it's because of that plethora of equipment that they're using, there's no standard. And we have to literally touch base with each one of them to make sure their equipment works. And over a organization of 1,000 plus, that's a huge lift.
We're talking with pediatric critical care specialist Thomas Brazelton, who is medical director for UW Health telehealth program. Are you a nurse or physician who uses telehealth technology? What are its strengths and weaknesses? How long has your clinic used telehealth? We're at 800-642-1234. Back in a moment on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're talking about telemedicine on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. So virtual care has long been touted as a way to get help quickly instead of waiting days to see a doctor, but Americans have been slow to embrace it. And there are signs that may be changing because of the spread of COVID-19. Do you think telemedicine can improve a patient's access to health care? Have you ever had a virtual visit with a doctor? How did it go? What were the circumstances? And did the diagnosis and treatment go smoothly? Was it the outcome you expected? Be part of this. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We have Dr. Thomas Brazelton. He's medical director for UW Health Telehealth Program, and he stays with us. Dr. Brazelton, earlier you were talking about HIPAA, the federal health privacy law. What are those privacy concerns with this technology?
Yeah, I think anything that whenever you're exposing information out on the web, which is oftentimes how we do this, and we'll get to maybe the broader definition of telehealth and some of the things that we lump under that, there are always security concerns. More and more we're hearing about how this health system or that one was hacked and thousands of patient information bits were released into the atmosphere. So the need for, and to make it a bit harder, because I think probably everything is hackable, is what we're trying to do. So encrypting information, personal health information that could be exploited, you know, social security numbers, anything. That is the right of the patient. We are given that right by the patient to hold that information. It's not ours to throw around. So we do bear quite a bit of responsibility for that. And the technology that we use, for instance, Skype and FaceTime, the data that is transmitted is actually recorded and stored on servers within Apple and other places. So this is, you know, you're really opening up the world. It's like somebody listening into every phone call that you make for the live interactive stuff. Under the telehealth umbrella, as you mentioned earlier, it can be asynchronous, where it's send an email in, or we'll distribute a questionnaire to you about your disease and the potential side effects of certain medications that you're on. So it can be very personal information that, you know, if exploited, could be very damaging to individuals.
Dr. Brazelton, the doctor-patient trust relationship, that's incredibly important in medicine. Is that more difficult to establish in a virtual space versus, seeing that patient face-to-face and establishing that trust?
You know, that's fascinating. I think in the synchronous face-to-face, and this is where the word face-to-face doesn't even mean anything anymore, right? Because we're not in the same room,
right,
but we're in the same virtual room, if you will. So that actually is quite easy to establish, which is fascinating because it's harder to do over the phone. How often do you get called by a telemarketer and you immediately don't like them? You want to hang up. You're invading my space. But when you invite someone in over your, and you're looking at them and you can see the body language and the cues that they're giving off, it's actually been shown in behavioral health to be more effective. The VA has done this for years, for decades, and they have found that actually in behavioral health, you have a better exchange over a computer, that there's something about the invasion of one's space when you're sitting in the same room, or the lack of privacy that you may feel, or even security, that goes away when you're communicating through a screen. I feel that the implications for our youth is maybe not so good in that regard, but I do think from what we're learning about it, there is the ability to have that relationship, and it's enhanced when the patient actually has some control. So you mentioned access. Telehealth is access. It is access to the nth degree, like we've never known it before. And when you give patient that kind of control, I think it enhances that trust more than anything, because now it's on their terms.
We're talking with Dr. Thomas Brazelton. He's a pediatric critical care specialist and the medical director for UW Health Telehealth Program. How do you think telemedicine can improve a patient's access to health care? Have you tried a virtual visit? Did you feel a connection with the physician on the other side of the screen there? Join in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. There are a number of tools and even sensors that doctors are using to enhance what you're learning from that patient in the virtual visit. Beyond the video screen, what other kinds of technologies are being used in telehealth?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's expanding, as you might imagine. I think the most of the tools at our disposal are fairly limited, but what's exciting is what people are coming up with who are outside of the health system and accessing it from a distance, saying, hey, you know what, you guys really should be trying this or that. And I think that's where the innovation and the excitement is really coming from. There are plenty of Bluetooth, what we call peripherals. So if you have the appropriate software and you're willing to sink a few hundred dollars in, you can have your own stethoscope. You can have your own DermCam, which is a high-resolution camera. You could have your own Bluetooth scale, and that's used a lot for patients who are in congestive heart failure to follow their weights, because if they're getting heavier, they may not be getting as much bang from their buck from their diuretic medication, and they're going to show up in the emergency room in congestive heart failure soon. You could the otoscopes, for instance, they're Bluetooth otoscopes, so parents can literally take video pictures of their child's tympanic membrane and diagnose an ear infection, which you otherwise can't do. It doesn't meet the standard of care. Unfortunately, we have providers not in our system because we don't let them, but across the country, there are telehealth providers, and I mean physicians, PAs, nurse practitioners, et cetera, who are diagnosing and treating over a camera without looking at a child's ear an ear infection and prescribing antibiotics. That does not meet the standard of care. You need to look in the ear to assure. So ear pain alone does not equal an ear infection. So the need for those peripherals is actually there, and how do we get them out to you? There are kiosks that are being set up. We have a couple scattered around town where patients can go in and literally access those peripheral technologies so that a provider can hear their heart, hear their breath sounds, see their skin up close. So, yes, there's more and more coming in that space. If you can envision a whole new healthcare system for certain conditions that the standard of care can be met by doing it from a distance, you're seeing telehealth of the future.
We heard from Kay, who called in from central Wisconsin, couldn't stay with us. And Kay says they can't afford a smartphone or a computer. And Kay is worried that people are going to miss out on care because they can't afford the new technologies. Are there grants for low-income families or other ways to help patients get access to technology to have telemedicine?
That is a great question, and I would say it is disease-specific and provider-generated. So we have, in our organization, we are very, very lucky to have a true pioneer in our ophthalmology department. Dr. Yao Liu has made inroads into rural communities looking at diabetic retinopathy using a camera that requires a non-dilated exam. Camera can be located in an ophthalmologist's office or in a clinic. Patients coming for routine care can go down and have the picture taken. It gets sent to her clinic. She actually can get a better exam of the retina using that image because the patient's not moving around, blinking, unable to hold still. And she can look at various, by adjusting the contrast, see various layers of the retina that she also wouldn't be able to see if
Wow.
she were looking in your eye. The rates of diabetic, it is the highest cause of blindness. It is preventable. And we do not do a good job tracking it. So for specific illnesses, I would say yes. And it's unfortunate, Kate, that people don't have access to the technology that we have all now come to take, most of us have come to take for granted. But unfortunately, telehealth does require that technology. So if communities are looking for grants, there are grants out there. Under Obama, there was a huge effort to put, basically network pipelines up to rural areas so that they the feed wouldn't be the problem. What they needed was the local technology.
Well, Doctor,
but they would have the bandwidth. Sorry.
Dr. Brazelton, we only have about 20 seconds left and wanted to just pivot for a moment. You are a pediatric critical care specialist. We're hearing reports that children aren't as vulnerable to the coronavirus as adults. Can you speak to this?
Yeah, no, that is true for the healthy children. But as you know, children's hospitals, their specialty is in children with chronic diseases, and those children are just as susceptible. So while we know we're not going to see the numbers that the adults are, we know that the children, that when we do see them, their chances are of being hit and hurt and maybe not surviving are just as much as adults. So we are expecting a wave.
Well, Dr. Brazelton, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Thomas Brazelton there, a pediatrics professor at UW School of Medicine and Public Health, and he's medical director for UW Health Telehealth Program. Coming up, we talk with the telemedicine program manager for Gunderson Health System, who's been advocating for this form of healthcare delivery on Capitol Hill. We get perspective from nurse Jess Easterday right after this news update. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Just a quick heads up on our programming. WPR is continuing to bring you coverage of the latest developments on the pandemic from our reporters all over the state. And we've also added more state news updates throughout the day each weekday. And you can hear them right after NPR News at the top of each hour. So right now we're exploring telemedicine. These virtual visits can handle a lot of care that would normally send patients to a doctor's office or urgent care. Think sinus infections, bronchitis, asthma, pink eye, rashes. The federal government last week said it will immediately expand telemedicine access to help people with Medicare. Have you ever connected virtually for an appointment? Do you live in rural Wisconsin and worry about access to medical care? Could telemedicine help? Join in at 800-642-1234. Jesse Easterday is a registered nurse and the program manager of telemedicine for the Gunderson Health System. Jesse, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate. Thanks for having me.
So how are your physicians and nurses using telemedicine and telehealth meetings to access patients right now who might need to talk about the coronavirus or have questions about their own situation?
So here at Gunderson, we have been lucky to have our frontline nursing staff with our telephone nurse advisor program in place since 1995 to handle patient questions and direct them to the appropriate level of care based on what their symptoms are. So that's our first step in the process of a telehealth encounter.
Oh, it's like
over the phone triage, exactly, so that we can direct them to what care they need, whether that be in-home care or if they do need to come for testing, they're directed to a testing facility.
And so that is the initial entry point when a patient calls in, is being connected to a nurse who can start the triage, ask the appropriate questions, and figure out what the next steps are?
That's correct.
How can these virtual visits, how have you seen the evolution of them, and how are they working at Gunderson?
Well, we've had a traditional telemedicine or our clinical telemedicine platform again since the 90s, which is a live audio connection, audio video connection with our patients. Our patients in those cases are actually at a facility like a clinic or a hospital, and our physician would be virtually connecting to them from La Crosse, from our hospital hub in La Crosse. So that's our traditional platform, but with this current situation that we have, we're needing to connect with patients in their homes. So again, the phone is going to play a big part in this, and our physicians will be looking at their schedules regularly and making the determination of who will have a phone call. And if they do need to actually see the patient, they will connect via an audio-video connection currently.
You know, some communities in your system are in rural areas where internet access can be really sketchy, even poor cell phone service reception. Are there workarounds for these areas where you can still make sure you're delivering the appropriate telemedicine?
You're right. We do have significant gaps in some of our areas, and a landline phone is helpful for some of these situations to have those phone conversations with a clinician. If audio and video is that would be preferred in some cases, if we would have to be assessing a post-op wound, for example, or some sort of rash, certainly audio video would be the best. However, we understand that that may not always be possible.
Oh, so you can show the wound on the screen and the physician or the nurse practitioner on the other end can get a good look at that wound to see how the care is going, how it's progressing?
Exactly. That's exactly right. So we're continuing that continuity of care in the patient's home.
Let's take a moment to talk about insurance and billable hours. I've gone through an over-the-phone nurse triage.
Sure.
The nurse has spent more than a half hour with me on the phone. I know that that is time, that that is money there with billable hours. How have you worked out with insurance?
Yeah, so for nurse time, billing has always been a question, and it's primarily not reimbursable or not billed. So, but with this current issue that we have going on, there are some billable services for physicians or other clinicians to connect with their patients in the home. So, even via phone,
if it's a physician virtual visit, but not exactly in the nurse situation, what are patients saying about this virtual connection and having these phone conversations and these telemedicine, over a video screen conversations with their patients, with their physician?
Yeah, well, this is definitely a change for many of our patients. Rurally, we've been offering telemedicine for a long time, so many of those patients have had some experience with an audio-video connection with their clinician. So they may be more familiar than some people that live right here in La Crosse in being able to connect this way. So we do have some guidance on our website as far as what this will entail. We will get consent and provide some information when these appointments are being switched from an in-person encounter to either telephone or video encounter. So if they do have questions, we're certainly prepared to answer any of their questions directly.
We're talking with Jessie Easterday, a registered nurse and the program manager of telemedicine for Gunderson Health System. And you can join in with your questions. Do you live in a rural area? And are you concerned about access to medical care? Have you tried telemedicine? How did it go? What do you think about virtual communication with a doctor? Do you see benefits or drawbacks? Tell us about what you are seeing in your care at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. So, Jessie, how has information technology changed since the 90s and you've started scaling up telemedicine? I would imagine that, you know, literally every year or every month there is something new to update or something new to bring on through IT.
Oh, absolutely. Our first telemedicine carts were, on physical carts that were industrial sized with two large monitors, big box TVs on these carts. They weighed about 300 pounds and were extremely top heavy. So we've now streamlined that into a single monitor with a high-definition camera that's white balancing and really can zoom in on the tiniest area of somebody's body if we have to look at a specific
wound or rash or anything, we have that capability with various hand cameras and such. But that's with our telemedicine platform. We're not going to have that capability necessarily within somebody's home current state. But the fact that everybody, you know, most people or many people have a device that is capable of having these encounters, and we're able to continue to provide quality care to patients and maintain that connection with our patients is the ultimate. It's a great benefit that we do have access to a lot of this technology.
And you're trying to incorporate telemedicine into dozens of different specialties. Are there specific specialties where it really works well?
So our largest specialties that are providing telemedicine services would be our behavioral health population, nephrology, so kidney specialists, and those kidney patients are needing to be seen sometimes multiple times in a month. And the travel that they have to experience to manage their chronic disease has been burdensome for the patients.
Oh, because of dialysis?
Dialysis or other end-stage renal disease issues, they may need to have a diabetic or an educator meet with them, like a nutritionist. And so nutrition services can be delivered via telemedicine. So they're not all of our clinicians that are offering telemedicine are physicians. Many are advanced practice nurses, dietitians, or people with other specialties.
Can you do physical therapy in a virtual setting?
So that's an interesting question, because previously, no, they were not. Medicare and Medicaid did not authorize them to be a provider for services of telemedicine. However, right now in this situation, it has opened up. So there are some things that we would be able to do via telemedicine.
Right, because you continually have to think, I would imagine, about quality of care, ensuring that you're able to deliver the same quality as you would be doing in a face-to-face setting.
Absolutely. There will be some things that we won't be able to accomplish. However, the vast majority of a clinician and patient relationship is indeed just the relationship and the conversation that they have. So many of these things can be handled without peripheral devices like a stethoscope or otoscope.
You know, how has the patient and physician relationship changed through telemedicine? Can you still establish that trust from a distance?
You know, I think you can. I think it takes skill. On the clinician's side, to maintain eye contact and build that trusting relationship. But I've been involved with encounters with patients over telemedicine and have seen that relationship being built. And in fact, one patient wanted to shake the hand of the physician at the end, and the physician was in La Crosse, and they were an hour and a half away.
We're talking with Nurse Jessie Easterday, who runs telemedicine for Gunderson Health System, which is based in La Crosse. Telemedicine connects providers and patients through interactive video, audio, all in real time. Do you already use your smartphone video camera to meet with doctors or nurses when you're sick? Do you find the care to be comparable to a face-to-face visit? What's missing? Where do you see potential? Do you work in IT and support telehealth services? What's your work like now? Still time, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Telemedicine is emerging as a key care option in the face of COVID-19. It's also a way to check in with a physician if you think you have symptoms of the coronavirus. And over the past year, Gunderson Health System has been scaling up its telemedicine with 160 providers from dozens of specialties available to patients in Wisconsin, Minnesota, and Iowa. So is telemedicine being used appropriately? How can you ensure that a trusted physician-patient relationship is established? Can that same trust be achieved virtually? Has your insurance covered a virtual visit? Still time, 800-642-1234. Jesse Easterday is a registered nurse and the program manager of telemedicine for the Gunderson Health System, and she stays with us. Let's take a call now. Dennis is with us from Boulder Junction this morning. Hi, Dennis.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to give you a successful example of telehealth, telemedicine expansion. The town of Boulder Junction, during 2019, decided that we would expand our broadband to high-speed broadband. We're a town of approximately 900 full-time residents. In the summer, the population explodes. But we are remote. We are rural. We're basically in the woods, surrounded by lakes. Working with our provider, CenturyLink, we applied for and received last Thursday a $1.6 million grant from the State of Wisconsin Public Service Commission to begin expanding high-speed broadband to every premise in Boulder Junction. And we're eternally grateful and thankful for the decision of the Public Service Commission. Marshfield Clinic Health System has been completely supportive during our project. In fact, they've made a substantial pledge that will allow us to construct the facility. So this is year one of the project. Our construction schedule had anticipated beginning construction in July. We'll see how that works out. But we can state unequivocally that telehealth and telemedicine is necessary for every area of the United States, but most importantly, rural areas of the United States.
Oh, Dennis, thank you so much for sharing this success story and this brand new news out of Boulder Junction, a community of 900 people. Jesse Easterday, what do you think?
I think that's amazing to be able to have that connection with, especially with specialty care, will really open some doors for your residents. That's excellent news.
Well, Jesse, I know you've been working also on a federal level with federal leaders on telemedicine. How have they responded to the use of this technology?
You know, I think what I do in with my advocacy work with the Center for Telemedicine and eHealth Law is really to educate and provide information to our leaders that are in Washington, and letting them know that of some of the barriers that are existing, and some of the barriers that exist are really in place. They're false. They're false barriers, meaning they could easily be removed. They were put in place for budgetary controls, and I think what we did see was that it really did limit the expansion. And in times like this, I think this is a good example of why we need the removal of some of those barriers in place.
What is a false barrier that you've been trying to remove, trying to get beyond?
With Medicare reimbursement and where locations, they've designated locations by counties as far as who can, which residents of those counties can have a telemedicine encounter with their clinician. So if you're in a metropolitan statistical area or a county that's designated as a metropolitan statistical area and a Medicare recipient, telemedicine is not available to you currently.
And so that certainly eliminates a very large swath of the population who also need care.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, you know, in the state of Wisconsin, we have 14 metropolitan statistical areas. Many of them are in the east side of the state, but those patients have to travel too for care. And so, removing some of those barriers would be helpful for them to be able to access that care.
Jesse, thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Jesse Easterday is a registered nurse and the program manager of telemedicine for the Gunderson Health System. And earlier, we talked with pediatric care specialist and telehealth medical director at UW Health, Thomas Brazelton. Coronavirus has turned life upside down in Wisconsin, but the state still has an April 7th election coming up with a presidential primary, state Supreme Court race, and hundreds of local races. And for many people, these things aren't in the front of their minds right now. Rob Mentzer has more.
This is an emotionally intense time, so we asked people, how are you holding up?
I'm scared. I am concerned.
Melissa Markgraf lives in Langlade County. At a park in Green Bay, Bobby Joe Scholes didn't feel the same.
I don't know. There's not that much of a fear.
At a truck stop in Sparta, Josh Brown, Orlando Thomas, and Ann Sprain shared their feelings.
I'm a truck driver, so I deal with a lot of flu bugs, so it don't bother me none.
I guess I'm coping good. I mean, it's like an epidemic.
I am a little bit nervous, you know, concerned about health.
And in Wausau, Francis Slazak summed up the way a lot of people feel.
It's been a real roller coaster.
No one is feeling only one thing right now. It's a lot of different things all at once. Most people weren't really in the mood to talk about politics, but we know that the effects of all this on Wisconsin's economy, on 2020 elections, on people's lives are going to be massive. Last week, the owners of the Wausau area restaurant where Slazak worked as a server called everyone in and told them they were laid off and they weren't sure when they'd reopen.
The meeting was very somber. There was fear. There was people not knowing what to do.
Slazak has a six-month-old baby at home, and she's one semester away from finishing her degree in elementary education. Her partner is a respiratory therapist. She says they'll be okay financially, but she's still reeling.
My education is on hold and my job is on hold. My life is a little bit on hold.
Markgraf and her husband own the Shady Brook Campground in Elko. They feel certain that they won't be able to open on April 15th like they usually do. But after that, they don't know.
I was talking to my husband about it just yesterday and he said, Melissa, this is one we don't have to worry about for 30 days. And I said, okay.
She has a 5 and an 8-year-old at home. She's working from home for a food distributor and doing her best to provide stability. But it's hard.
Well, my anxiety, I wake up with my heart in my throat. And when I wake up and when the kids go to bed are the two most terrifying moments for me because it's quiet.
We also asked people around the state what they thought about the government's response to the crisis. The way people view what the government is doing right now could shape the way they vote in the future. Here's what Slazak, Brown, and Thomas had to say.
I think the government response on this crisis has been a little bit confusing.
They've made it political, which is not something any of them should be doing.
I think that they should have did this a while ago, like way before it got too serious.
And these were the views of Chris McDonough of Sun Prairie, Sandy Brewer of Madison, and Jerry Lease of Sparta.
Well, I think on the national level, it's a complete disgrace.
I think we're too slow. Too slow.
He's doing a pretty good job. He likes to talk. He gets a little ahead of himself. He ought to let the experts talk a little more.
The coronavirus has led to a surge in requests for absentee ballots for April elections. Democrats have called for extending the availability of absentee voting. The mayor of Green Bay said Wisconsin should switch to vote by mail for all elections. But all of that would take an act of the legislature, which has postponed its session. Brewer was a cashier at Target, and she works at the Hy-Vee grocery store in Madison. She's taken a leave of absence from both jobs. She says she's going to hibernate.
I'm 73 years old, and I have asthma. And if the coronavirus hits me, I'm at a very, very high risk of not making it.
Brewer is a political independent. She says she'll vote absentee on April 7th and that she'll definitely vote in November, but she hasn't decided for whom. She says the U.S. government's response to coronavirus was too slow. And like all of us, she wonders what life will be like on the other side of all this. Rob Mentzer, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Stay with us. We have the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's Molly Beck explaining the governor's order for non-essential residents to stay home. And then we'll check in with Morna Foy, the president of the Wisconsin Technical College System, about how our community colleges are navigating this time. This is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.